Now, we're going to read again in Proverbs, this time in chapter 2. Chapter 2 of Proverbs, and verse 1. My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding. Yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, and out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, and understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things, who leave the paths of uprightness and walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil, and delight in the forwardness of the wicked, whose ways are crooked, and they froward in their paths. To deliver thee from the strange woman, even from the stranger which flattereth with her words, which forsaketh the guide of her youth, and forgetteth the covenant of her God. For her house inclineth unto death, and her paths unto the dead. None that go into her return again, neither take they hold of the paths of life, that thou mayest walk in the way of good men, and keep the paths of the righteous. For the upright shall dwell in the land, and the perfect shall remain in it. But the wicked shall be cut off from the earth, and the transgressor shall be rooted out of it. Now that will do for reading tonight. We don't want to repeat much of what we have said before, but those who have been here present before this will know that we have been stressing as best we can the emphasis that's put upon wisdom, especially in this section, which has to do with the younger folk being instructed by a father. That is to say, it's teaching for the young people of God. Not particularly in that particular age, but right down the ages, it's the importance of wisdom in that connection. Now, we don't want to go into that. We've already covered that in former nights. But what we do want to get at tonight is what's in our chapter. And that is the one thing that will strike you immediately is when you compare this with what we were at last night. For in last night, we had wisdom on the top of the wall and at the gates of the city, calling out to everybody to get their attention and to listen to the voice of wisdom. Now tonight it's the other way around. It's the poor creature that needs the wisdom, and he's crying out for it, and he's seeking it. I hope you can follow what I mean now. I don't want to be confounding. In the previous chapter, it was wisdom looking the ear of the needy that they would listen to the call of its voice. In this chapter, it's the needy crying out to wisdom and seeking to find it and making sure they possess it. Now that, of course, leads to the writer emphasizing why they're doing all this crying out. And the different words, a piling up of words, you know, to receive and so on, and hearken and listen to it. And then that gives us now to our next little point that we want to stress, and that is this. What's this crying out about for? What's this thing you're going to get? And now he says it's so valuable. And he puts then the emphasis on its preciousness and its value. It's a mine of wealth. And the sooner you get a hold of it, the better. It's something to grasp, because you've got something when you do possess it. Then, in the closing part of the chapter, I'm giving you an outline of what's going to be the stretch of the meeting, if the Lord helps us. In the closing part of the chapter, it'll do two great things for you, if you possess it. And the first, it will help you to avoid the evil man and his insinuations. And in the second case, it will help you to avoid the evil woman and her influence. And that's the way it ends up. You see, in verse, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, verse 12, and then in verse 16, to deliver thee from the strange woman, even from the stranger which fluttereth with her words. So I think you can easily see, I'm not adding to the chapter or even taking from it, I'm just giving you the bare framework on which it's built. That is, there's a crying out for wisdom, there's an emphasis put on its value when you get it, and then the beneficial effects when you have it, the benefit it would be. You know, there's some things when you possess them. Now you know this. And when you have them, like, what good are they to you? You can put them to no useful purpose. Things people have offered me, things I says you didn't give them to me for the, I wouldn't be able to use them. They're no good to me. Give them to somebody that will make use of them. You see, if you have something and it's no use to you, it's not worth having. But you see, the writer wants to show us that when you get this, and when you do apprehend it and so on, you have got something. And then you have got something that you can use and something that will be a benefit and an asset to you. Now, we look into this a little closer. In getting it, the first thing, of course, is that you're prepared to listen. You're prepared to heed the counsel that you're given. Now, that's very important, because really, if we don't pay heed to what we're told, we might as well not be told it. I don't know whether you know it, it's quite easy to sit in a meeting and your ears closed. It's quite easy to listen to ministry and take no heed to it. It's quite easy just to forget all about it and hardly know. Maybe people, you're looking up at the preacher, all right, he thinks you're heeding them. He thinks you're listening to what he says. But when all's said and done, hey, your mind's away somewhere else, possibly. But you see, when it comes to wisdom's voice, that was emphasized so much in the meeting last night in that previous chapter, God not only wants to, that the wisdom will speak, but he wants us to listen to it and heed what we hear so that we give attention to the matter involved. Then he says, if thou incline your ear and apply it unto wisdom, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice in understanding and seeketh her and searchest her for her as for hid treasures. Don't you notice the words that are used? Crying after it. And seeking it. And searching it out. That means to say, now we'll have to get down to facts. It just doesn't come accidentally. And it just doesn't come without exercise. And it just doesn't come to be your portion. Just by mere chance. And it doesn't come to be yours because somebody has told it to you. Because if you don't take it in, you might as well not have heard it. And this is very solemn because it lets us see a whole big principle that many of us sit down now and we do admit it, don't you? Nearly all of us will admit it anyhow. Isn't it strange that we have been to so many ministry meetings and heard so much ministry over the years of our lifetime? Now, very few of you have heard much more than I have heard. I suppose some of you may have heard a little more, but not too many of you. I've been only 70 years or so listening to it, and you see, I've heard quite a bit. And heard some of the men that you never would, some of the younger ones will never hear. They only know their names by seeing them in print sometimes. Some of them even never heard of their names. But you see, we've heard all that. Isn't it a wonder we're not better Christians than we are? Isn't it a wonder that we're not stirring the north of Ireland to its from corner to corner? Isn't it a wonder we haven't seen more of the mighty power of God than we have? Do we never think of asking ourselves, are we taking full advantage of that which God has given us? Are we really benefiting with it? Are we crying after it? Are we really seeking it? Are we searching for it? Then we come to the next juncture. You say, well, now he's keeping us still in very vague and what is that? Well, then you come to the next juncture, and he says, there, if thou seekest for us silver and searchest for us for hid treasures. One of the practices they had in Old Testament times, and indeed, I suppose, maybe in some lands yet, and that is, they hadn't the banks that we have, you know. Some people, you know, you have no idea, you see, how people have changed their minds about the bank. There were people years gone by wouldn't have trusted the bank with their money. One woman was, I think she went down nearly every day or two and made them go over the books and make sure that they had it. She wasn't too sure, but she thought they'd lost it. She couldn't think of it. And of course, the rising generation, they think entirely different. They're all alerted and all that sort of thing. But you see, when there was no bank, and when there was no safe place to put it, things, a lot of people dug into the ground. And they dig the hole. And they stored it down in there. And they covered it up so that nobody knew where it is. I hope no one forgot about it, for it might be there yet. But, I mean, it would be strange if they didn't find it. And then again, of course, in my day, now this is not very long ago, just a lot of years ago, they would have got money stuffed into the roof space, up on the roof in the attic, stuck in under the slates, or stuck in under the thatch, and people hid their money in the house that way. Of course, I don't know where you need to hide it nowadays, for the thieves will break in no matter what you do. But I mean, they had the idea of getting it hidden, like nobody would see it. Now, he says, this thing is so precious, you're just like a hidden treasure. You'd hide it in your heart, and you'd hide it in your soul, and you'd keep it, and you'd make sure it's very, very valuable. I can't afford to lose it. It's better than silver. It's something great. I want to have it. You say, well, he's talked a lot about wisdom, that fella, and he has told us a whole lot about his value and so on. Now tell us, what is it going to be when he does get it? Because that's what you really want to get to know. What would I have obtained that is so valuable? And what would I have made my own that's so worth hiding and so worth keeping in that nobody would take it from me? Now he tells us that in the next verse. Then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. I want you to take a hold of that. In the earlier nights that we were emphasizing, you know, we gave the key thought of how this book is wonderfully constructed round the thought of the fear of the Lord. Now, this will interest some of them. I think the word Lord's in this book something like 60 times, maybe, or something like that. I'm not going to be too, memory wouldn't hold with the numbers that I would need to know, but something about that. And strange, isn't it, in the book, that the word God only occurs about 5 times in it, compared with the Lord, there's some 60 times in it. Now, it's the fear of the Lord here, and then here, I think, is the first reference to God in the book, and find the knowledge of God. Now we want to get down to something. This is really where the treasure is. You say, tell me, what will be this wisdom, and what will it bring me about? Well, it will bring me into a twofold understanding of things that are very vital. When I would possess this wisdom that the writer has in mind, I'd have an awe for the Lord, a fear of the Lord. But I'd have something different and something greater than that, as it were, if I could call it greater. I'd have the knowledge of God. I'm giving you time to think that over. Because Christianity is one of the greatest wonders in the universe. Maybe you'll be like most of us, I'm coming back to childhood or to the time when I got saved. The main thought in my heart, I'll tell you the truth, the night I got saved was to escape eternal doom. I'm not saying it was the only thought, but it was the main thought of my concern. I didn't want to perish. Maybe the rest of you were no better than I was, and no better taught than I was. Now that meant that I was in earnest to get saved, and God pitied me and saved me, as you know. And you've heard me tell it likely time and again. Now, what we do want to get round to is this. That was a far bigger wonder than we likely took in. I rather like the words of the hymn, I don't know whether you often quoted. O Lamb of God, thy precious blood, this great redemption wrought, not only snatched from burning hell, but to God's bosom brought, and raised the ruined wrecks of sin above created thought. Did you know, dear soul tonight, get a hold of it, that the greatest advancement that could be made in a human being's experience is to get to know God. Now I know that in the gospel we preach it quite freely now, don't be thinking we're in mystical lines. This is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom thou hast sent. Now, there is a sense in which the moment you got saved, you got to know God. But that's not exactly what's in my mind or in the passages here. It's that intimacy with the Almighty That's intimacy with the very thoughts of God. That is your mind getting molded. Now listen carefully as best you can to think along with the Almighty and see things as God sees them. And to get intimate with the Almighty, that's the highest ranks that you'll ever reach. You say, well, I have a great love for assembly truth, and I have a great love for good practical ministry. That's all right. Now, we're all agreed with that. And I have this and I have that. But dear soul, I hope we don't stop short of what God has in view. I hope we don't drop away back into mere dead formality and mere rigid hardness without any knowledge of the Almighty. That would be a desperate small in development of spirituality. And then I'd put it down to us. Now, we'll be very humble about it tonight. Do we know God better now than we did last year? Are we getting to know Him better as the days go by? Now, let us be careful about that. An intimacy with the Almighty. That's where wisdom will land you. Now, I know that these are days of learning. I'm not denying that. I wasn't happened to be so fortunate to be brought up in the days when you got to these big places and learned a whole lot of things. I just had to be satisfied with simple things and little things that you boys would merely smile at. And I suppose when we got a bit of geometry or something like that, we thought we're doing that not too bad. And able to write a line or two of English, we thought we weren't doing too bad. We didn't know any better, you see. In these days of learning, you see, we are away looked upon as of knowing nothing. But you see, there's a school, dear soul, that you might need to get into, maybe you could miss. And you could make advancements in it. And when you have made advancements in it, the learning you'd get then, you'll enjoy throughout all eternity. And that's where the sweetness comes in. You know, you drop your engineer. Now, I'm not making a little of it. And you'll drop even your medical profession or whatever you had, and your learning of sciences or whatever they may be. All that just goes down in the grave with you. You know, I stood at the grave of a very learned man in the Scriptures. And do you know what felt sad? You mightn't think it. And it says, there he is now, and he had to take it all with him. All that was in his head. In fact, if only a fraction of it, I'd be very happy. All that was in his head was just put in the grave with him. I know he left a wee bit in writings and so on and things behind, but, I mean, none of us could just take, he could leave his money, he could leave anything, but he couldn't leave what he knew. Now, dear soul, there's something you have that you can't leave to the children. And there's something you have you can't leave to your dearest friend. And that is an intimacy with God. That's your own personal experience. Now, if there's anything to equal that, you can tell us about it. To know God. Isn't it lovely when we sing it now? There no stranger God shall meet thee. Stranger thou in courts above. He who to his rest shall greet thee. Greet thee with a well-known love. A practical knowledge as the days go by of the Almighty. Now I want to tell you something. If you get to know the Almighty, it will make a change in your life. It will adjust many of the things that people would wonder could they ever be made right. It will preserve you, as we'll see later, from many a course and many a path that would be totally grieving to yourself at the end of days. As we said last night. Now we want that very clear now. That is to say, you get this knowledge and you'll understand the fear of the Lord and you'll find the knowledge of God. The knowledge of God. That, to my mind, is the top lesson of humanity. The highest skill that can ever be reached by a mortal being is an intimate knowledge of God. It's lovely, you know, to read the Lord's words, isn't it? Yes, isn't it lovely to read them? How sweet it was for our blessed Lord. And he could look back even in his prayer in John 17 to the glory which I had with thee before the world was. It must have been a wonderful thing to find a man on earth, none less than the Son of God, with a perfect knowledge of the Almighty. I think that's worth thinking about. A perfect knowledge of the Almighty. He knew his Father. He knew him intimately. He knew every thought that was in his mind. He was absolutely conformed to his father's will. Ah, but you say, come away down to but this point. Sure, we're only ordinary people here, and we're only ordinary believers, and we're not away up, and we haven't a whole lot of this scholarship that you're talking about, and many of us have never had much development and so on. Now, we're quite unaware of all that. We all feel our limitations. Isn't it great to know? Now, isn't it great to know that in the wonder of God's grace, that when it comes to close contact with Him, it's not human ability He's looking for. It's a submissive will. It's not your skills that He values, but it's our devotion of heart and our willingness to learn in His school what would be for our good and for His eternal glory. Now, look at verse number 6, because this is the bit you need to see. You say, well, how am I going to get this? You see, in the early verses, I think I've tried my best to emphasize you're crying out for it in verse 3, and you're lifting up your voice for it, and you're seeking it as silver, and you're searching for it, and so on. Now come to verse 6. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of His mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. You know, there's many a thing you're crying for and you won't get. Did you hear this now? And maybe I'll have to tell you, and I don't want to discourage you, but maybe there'll be some of the prayers that you'll be uttering and they may not be answered. And you have no maybe guarantee that you'll have them answered. You would like them to be answered, but they're not maybe necessarily be so. But I want you to think of this, that if you want this knowledge and this intimacy with the Almighty, He has promised you, now I give it. You're not asking for something you can't get. You're not looking up into, as it were, the stars and reaching out for something you can't obtain. But He not only desires that we look for it and search for it and want it. That's our diligence. But then He disposes of it in a free way. He's given it freely. And He says, yes, in verse number 6, for the Lord giveth wisdom, and out of His mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. Isn't it great that He gives it? Because the thing we need is the thing He gives. And He tells us to cry for it. And then He says, no, I'll give it. Now that, I think, is encouraging, isn't it? I love these encouragements in the book of Proverbs, because as we said out last night, nearly every practical section in it has a little bit of something added just at the end to give you an encouragement to make it well worthwhile. You see, as I said last night, and I'm repeating it, I don't mind repeating it, many things, and when you have them, you have nothing. But you see, God not only tells you what He wants you to do and the exercise He wants you to have, but He says, no, it's not going to be in vain. I'll give you exactly what you want. You go in for the diligence, and I'll do the supplying. Why, when you think of that, I feel like taking some of you young boys by the hand. I'm not going to pick you out at all in the meeting, and far from it. And I say, look, man, there's an opportunity for you in life that you would, if you could only grasp it. An opportunity that would far exceed anything that you'll ever get in this world. You might think, well, it's great if my mind develops. I hope I'll be a scholarly boy, and I hope I'll be learning, and I hope I'll do well. And maybe the sisters will be saying the same. I hope whenever I'm finished that I'll have this, that, and the other. You can have whatever you like, dear soul. But I want you to get a hold of this. There's a something to be learned, and there's a lesson to be learned, and there's a knowledge to be obtained, and there's a instruction to be appreciated, and it comes all from God, and He's willing to give it. And there's the golden opportunity, and there's the treasure within reach. I hope I've cheered your heart that you needn't get down in despair. Well, so somebody, you know, my whole difficulty is, I sit down to read, and somehow or other, I don't know hardly sometimes what I've read or what I can hardly more than remember it. And if you get a wee bit older, don't be talking too much about age, but if you get a wee bit older, you'll hardly maybe remember the passage you read when it comes to the end of the day. If you read it in the forenoon, you mightn't remember at bedtime. Now, don't you be laughing at that. You think that's all nonsense. You'll get a big change, you know, when you get on in life. And you'll wonder you make the mistakes that you'll make and all that sort of thing. I'm trying to be helpful to you now. The point is this. It's when you're young and when you can be molded and when your mind is alert and when your heart is open and when you have opportunity. That's the time to get at it, friend. Don't wait until you're retired or something like that and maybe never even see it. And that'll be too late. That'll be too late. Get at it at the start. And you can say to yourself tonight in this meeting, make up your mind as best you can with the Lord's help. From this night onward, I am going to seek the knowledge of the Almighty. I'm going to try to get more of His Word and more of His ways. And I'm going to try and enjoy it and live in the good of it for the rest of my lifetime. That, I think, is one of the greatest boons that could come our way. Now, we hope it's not dreamland. Now, it's not imagination. Now, it's not what you'd call a sort of imaginary spirituality. That's not at all. God has His school. I hope we believe this. And He has His scholars. And He's a great teacher. Sometimes, you know, you went to a school. I had the misfortune of being at maybe a difficult enough school. You wouldn't have learned anything at all, for the teachers weren't the best men that gave me instruction. They spent more time talking to one another than they did to the class. But no matter. But that doesn't make any difference. The point we want to get at is this, that God's a perfect teacher. Now, He's a perfect teacher. And you know, a perfect teacher can make wonders out of very poor stuff. Sometimes they talk about these great teachers now, and they grade them out. I could bring you to a teacher, she's retired now, and her percentage of passes in the, you know, that exam, that 11 pluses they talk about, was 75%. And the average teacher was only getting 33%. And some of them weren't even getting that. And her emphasis was this, that a person's properly taught, they'll make development, even though they're limited in their intelligence. The one thing that happened was, now this, I only say this to encourage some of you people, when some of them did get to the college, they couldn't get the same sort of teaching and they didn't get on then, and they had to drop out. They just weren't the material. She was merely making better material than you'd think of. I'm only giving you that. There's nothing bad about what I'm saying. I'm only showing you the illustration. But you want to get this now, friend. If God Almighty can teach you, who can? I'm giving you time to think that out. If God Almighty can teach you, who can? If you're willing to learn, if I'm willing to learn, He's willing to teach. Now, mind you, the way He has of teaching you, you mightn't think it. Not just maybe the way you'd expect. It's not theory, you know. He'll bring you maybe through different experiences in life. And maybe through different trials in life. And in those very deep and trying experiences, you get to know His way of acting, and you'll get to know His will in a way that you never thought of. And you'll discover that God is not only teaching in the sense of giving you the surface material, but He's bringing you through experiences that will enable you to grasp the teaching that He's giving. Now, I'm not trying to mystify you. I hope you'll understand that. That is, you'll find that life's a strange experience, isn't it? Some people write their life story. And they tell the... Somebody's at me the other night here. Says, you'll have to better get it down quick. And get it. Oh, they'll just have me write it. You nearly think we're going to write it tomorrow. I haven't been notion of it. But they want you to tell all your experiences and tell the different changes that came in life and so on. Now, dear souls, they think these things over. The living God is a great teacher. And He knows what scholars need. And He can operate the class, as I would put it this way, and He can move you up in different forms. And some He allows into one experience, and some He allows into another. But with infinite wisdom, it's all with a view to getting to know Himself and to know His intimate ways. Isn't that a great thing? Wants to get to know. Now remember, it's precious. It's like hidden treasure. It's worth doing. It's worth having. Cry out for it. And face it. And the Lord will make wonders out of us, and we'll get to know Him in a way that will make our hearts be thrilled at times until we be lost in wonder at the greatness of God and His ways of working. Now, we'll have to leave that. Now, the next thing that we need to notice is this, that there's a great stress in this book. Now, I'll not be going through it, as you know, and I'll go through the book. I'm going the way I'm doing it. It'll take me a long time to get through the book. But one thing that you'll see in the book, another key thought that's running through it, we didn't maybe stress it much, and that is the word path and the word way, the different ways that people walk. There is a path. Now, there's an evil path, and there are evil men on it. And then there's a good path, and there are good men on it. Now that is very common in this book. Go right through it, like dozens and dozens of references to these things. You'll have to maybe read it through to find them all. Now, when wisdom enters into thine heart and knowledge is pleasant, discretion shall preserve thee, and understanding shall keep thee, and deliver thee. This is the bit I want to get at. And deliver thee. You see, God's not the only instructor in this world. And God's not the only one that would be teaching. And God's not the only one that would have an influence. Be great if it was. But then you see, there are other voices sounding. And other calls coming. And the young brother or sister or older one for that matter has to watch, who am I listening to? Am I this heeding the calls of the Almighty? Or am I listening to the evil man? Because he has a course. And he has a way. And he would be trying to draw the simple onto his pathway. Did you notice that? To deliver thee from the way of the evil man, and from the man that speaketh forward things, who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, and who rejoices in evil. That is to say, the believer is in a world. Now listen, let us be careful about this. And this is what makes us feel for every generation. Somebody will tell you maybe now and then, oh, I wouldn't like to be in the present generation. The temptations that older folk hadn't. Well, that may be so. But there's always been, in every age, and in all the times of this world, there has always been those who would lead astray and put us into paths that are totally displeasing to God. Now he says, if you get this wisdom and get this knowledge of the Almighty, that call and that appeal of those wicked and evil men, it'll have no effect on you. You'll be delivered from it. And that, I think, is a big thing. Because, you see, we might say in the early part of the chapter, we have what we would call the positive benefit, the treasure that you'd obtain. And then when we come to these two thoughts that are at the end of the chapter, which we're now speaking upon, that is the evil man. Now, he not only does evil, but he has delight in it. And then you find that as you move through the world, and as you go to school, and as you go to your employment, you'll find that you'll meet with those continuously. Now, continuously. And all they think about is something that's wrong. And they've pleasure in that. If you meet them on a Monday morning, they'll tell you about the great weekend they had, and the times they had, and the things they did. I know a brother, now he's not in this country, so don't you be putting a name on him. You think I'm talking about somebody that you'd be around the corner, but I'm not so silly as that. I don't do that sort of thing. But I knew a man. You know what he told me? He said, see, you know, in my unsaved days, there was about three or four of us, he says, and we always went to town on a Saturday night. And so see, we never went into a shop, but we stole something. And they delighted in things they didn't want at all. But just the very thrill of being able to steal. Now, you wouldn't believe there's any thrill in that, but he thought it was a great thing that they could come out and they could steal maybe only a brush, he said, or maybe some wee item from the counter. And one of the tricks, he says, that we used to play was, there was old radios, you wouldn't know what I'm talking about, and there was valves in them. And he says, we'd have got the man to sell us a new valve. And then he says, we'd have worked him, and we'd have showed him the old one, and before we knew where we are, we changed the old one from the new ones, and we took a new one out and gave him the old one. There was nothing wrong with outwardly, and he thought he was just getting his own back. And he says, we thought that was a great thrill. All the nonsense you could think about. I'm only using that as an illustration of the pleasure. This is the bit you want to get at. The pleasure that certain people have of doing wrong. The thing that we think they should be grieved about. Now he says, I want to see you delivered from that. I don't want you to listen to any conversation from a man like that. I don't want you to fall into that trap. I want you to keep out of that. You say, well, what will keep me out of it? Well, of course, it's the Lord, in a sense, that preserves and keeps us out of it. But he says, those who possess wisdom will not be caught with that snare. They'll be delivered from that evildoer. They'll not be caught in any way in that trap. Now, we have to admit, now maybe you don't like me saying all these things publicly, but mind you, many Christians have been influenced by the context they've made. I've been influenced. I'm not saying they'd be influenced to do the bad things that I've referred to, such as stealing or anything like that. But they have been influenced. Now you go to the university, or you go to some of the secondary schools, or you go to some of the places, and you go to employments, and where there are hundreds or maybe thousands of people working. And you find that before you know who you are, they're talking about this, that, and the other, and they're talking about things all the time, always worldly things. And that would get into your mind. Now, I don't like to be thought of as given license. We're far from it. But a brother came to me on one occasion, and he's in heaven now, so you're not seek to not tell who he is. You're not know anything about him. He's in glory. And he told me with tears in his eyes, to see, I started to look at football on the television. And he says, before I knew where I was going to the games to watch it. Mixing with the ungodly. Now the Lord restored him. He became an overseer later in his life. And he's in heaven now. So this is not 30 weeks ago, you know. This is years ago. The only thing I wanted to say is this. You have no idea how a Christian can drift if he gets caught in this snare. And if he hasn't the divine wisdom to say, no, that's not for me. To say that, I can't touch that. I won't even play on the edge of it. I won't even trifle with it. I'll keep as far away from it as possible. I'll have nothing to do with it. Because I know God. And I know that that's not pleasing to him. You see, these are things that we need to take into heart. And we need to grasp them as best we can. Because they're solemn and serious. It's all right thinking, well, I'm in a believer's meeting now tonight and I'm listening to the Word of God. And I have no intention of turning worldly and I have no intention of drifting away from God. I'm sure you haven't. I hope you haven't. Life can become a place of testing and a trial. And quite a few, especially when they've gotten into circles that they never expected to be in. And listening to the ungodly from morning to night. They just simply couldn't help but be turned away from the things of God into these other things. Now, these are very solemn warnings, and don't take them lightly. Now, when we have dealt with that, he says, whose ways are crooked and froward in their paths. And then he says, to deliver thee from the strange woman, from the stranger which flattereth with her words. Now, the strange woman here, of course, as you know, is the unfaithful woman. We're not going to go into that in these meetings. But we do want us to see that throughout these chapters, there's a very solemn warning along that line. Now, we have to admit, now, we're going to get down to very earthly things just at the moment. For a few minutes, that we live in a terrible world. And one of the weaknesses of the present society, especially in this land and across the water a wee while, is the low moral standard that is about. And what annoys me more than anything else, some of the Christians seem to have very little regard for immorality. And they don't look upon it with a serious view that the Bible takes of it. Now I'm giving you time to think about that. Because you see, the unfaithful wife was put to death in the Old Testament, was put alongside murder. Wasn't looked upon the same as stealing or the same as telling lies or anything like that. Now, those are all sins. But this woman reminds us of the solemn reality of the dreadfulness of immorality coming into the life. Now, I know the woman can be taken up. I'm not against this, for I've done it myself, as an illustration of the world. And that can be used in that figurative sense. But just looking at the passage in a bare statement, if we want to be delivered from the world's ways of thinking. Mind you, the world has a strange way of thinking at the present time. And all that the Bible would condemn as absolutely corrupt, the world thinks nothing of it now. Things that never would have been spoken of even when I was a boy, the people would be ashamed to mention them. They're now looked upon, well, just, you know, human weakness. And it's plastered over. Now, I hope the Lord preserves us as God's dear people with a realization of the seriousness of immorality and the seriousness of sin. That we not look upon it lightly. That we need preserve from it. And we need to be delivered from it. For many a child of God has stepped into it and has brought dishonor upon the Lord and grief to their own soul. Like, you don't know all that I would know on that. I'm not going to go into anything. But you've known the many people that have looked me in the face with tears in their eyes, mind you. And they says, can it be? I didn't believe I'd ever go to stoop to that. And these are solemn things. And we don't want you to think that we're here to thrash and get on. That's not the point. The point is we want to see people preserved from such ideas. And now let us get well into it. The one thing that is doing more harm than anything else is light thoughts about evil. It hasn't changed in the mind of God. He still hates it. And sin is still sin in the eyes of the Almighty, no matter what the newspaper says, no matter what the Acts of Parliament say. Sin is still sin. And he hasn't altered in his view of it. Now, we shouldn't alter either. So that we need to be delivered. Now, do you notice the flattery? Oh yes, those nice soft words. That which would appeal to you. And maybe a wee bit of praise along with it. And all that kind of thing. Everything that would make it attractive. And he says, who forsaketh the guide of her youth and forgetteth the covenant of her God. That is to say, she has left the instruction she got when she was young. And she has left the covenant that God had made with Israel, because God had an arrangement with his people, and he had said in that covenant the different commandments that you know them only too well. And she has thrown that overboard. Depart you from early instruction, and depart you from the word of God, to put it in modern language. And these are witty matters. And we needn't try to hide them. I know you, brethren, would like to think they don't exist. And you'd like to think that everybody was just a saint of God that would never be tempted in any way. That's all imagination. The evils are in the world. And we can't fail the fact that we are in the world. And don't let us forget that we still have that fallen nature within us. And only by divine power can we be preserved from yielding to its temptations. May the Lord help us. That's all we can say along that line. Now, there's one solemn side to this, and it's very solemn, and that is to say that those who go wholesale into this, of course they're not saved, as you would know, but those who go wholesale into this, there's no recovery. Mind you, there are people who have gone a certain course, and they've stuck at it to the day they died. They never pulled out of it. And certain evils have gripped people's hearts, and they have gone on with them until the very day they died. They never changed. Never changed. And that's very solemn. Now we want to get to near the end, because the minutes are gone. Now, he says, none that go unto her return. Now verse 20, that thou mayest walk in the way of good men and keep the paths of the righteous. That is to say, you don't need to go on the track that these boys are on. That old dirty track, keep away from that. That's no path for your feet to be on. But he says, there's paths of good men. There are always those who have lived for God. There'll always be in your mind now, without me going any further than where you live. Wherever you live, there'll be somebody that you know, and they have walked a path that you can say, well, now that's a good man's path. That's the path that a man should take. That's the path that a man should follow. And that's the path that I would want to tread. And that's the path that I ought to tread. And that's what God would want you to do. Mind you, God would want you to fear him. And he would want you to keep away from evil. And no trifling with sin. Nobody said it'll never be found out. And the brethren will know nothing about it. That doesn't make any difference. God knows. God knows. And the fact that it's kept quiet doesn't make it any better. Doesn't mend it. God knows all that's going on. Now there's a good encouragement at the end of the chapter. And I wouldn't like to leave it without emphasizing it. For the upright shall dwell in the land, and the perfect shall remain in it. That is, the fully developed shall remain in it. But the wicked shall be cut off from the earth, and transgressors shall be rooted out of it. That is to say, the good are those who will abide in the enjoyment of the land. Oh, you say, but sure, they die as well as the unsaved. Some of them die quite young. Some of the most godly men, as you know, have died in their late 20s. Robert Murray McShane and all those men died quite young. And quite a number of them have been gone in our day, and they didn't live out their lifetime. Well, that is perfectly true. Now, don't misunderstand your Bible. We're not saying that this is the way that we see things in our day. No doubt long life was a great thing in the old economy. But it's the usefulness of life, no matter how long or short it is, that is most important. The point is that we want to see is this, they possess the land. Now, our possession is not a bit of land. You know it's not. There's not the earth even. But it's those spiritual treasures that we were speaking about in the beginning of the meeting. Those spiritual treasures are what we possess. Oh, we'll hold on to them. Well, it's great to die wealthy, isn't it? I was saying at Mr. Moore's funeral that he was one of the wealthiest men in Glengormley. I'm sure the people wonder what I was talking about. It wasn't that he was that wealthy material. I don't know what he was, Harry, for student material. That wasn't in my mind at all. But you see, it's a great thing to have spiritual wealth, isn't it now? To be basking in the riches of eternal treasures. That's worthwhile. I mean, you don't get that for a penny. And you couldn't buy that in shops. And your father can't leave you that in his will. That's something you have to learn for yourself. But isn't it great to have a good possession? Oh, yes. And then he speaks of those who will be pulled up like an old weed, pulled up out of the earth. Rooted out. Plucked out. That's the way you have it. What way it's rooted out or plucked out. That is just the same as you go through a place and pull out the weeds. Go on pulling out the weeds, as it were. Dear soul, all around us are growing the weeds, as it were, of human wickedness and human depravity. And they'll be all rotted out. They have nothing for eternity. They'll go out without anything. But we'll have not only treasures in time, but we'll have treasures for all eternity. Wouldn't it be great if we could enjoy them? Now we'll just finish. As you can see, I'm through. The time's up. I don't want to keep you too late. But we'll just sum it up in something like this. A crying out. An inward yearning. A soul distress with concern. To obtain wisdom, because it's so valuable that when I have it, I have a treasure. And what will that entail? It will mean I'll know God and I'll know the fear of God. And what will that mean? It will mean that I'll be directed in the right path. It will mean that I will be living a life delivered from the evil man. And from the evil woman. And I'll be walking in the fear of God. And at the same time, I'll have treasures that I'll enjoy in time. And in a fuller way throughout all eternity. Mind you, friend, it's great. Great. Get a hold of it when you're starting, because you can't get it fixed up when you're at the end. Get a hold of it at the beginning of your Christianity. Don't let it waste. Don't waste those early days, for those are the formative years of your life. Get going in the great school of God and learn Him until your soul is thrilled and you can say, yes, He is mine and I know Him and He knows me and we're friends. We walk together and we talk together and we rejoice together and we're going to dwell together throughout all eternity, shall we pray?